The 0-2 pitch, swing and a miss, knocked him out. The Philadelphia Phillies are 2008 World Champions of Baseball. It's Wednesday, March 30th, 2016. Welcome to the Philly Press Box Radio Roundtable, brought to you by ShopForTissues.org, the online shopping network of the Tissues for Kyle Foundation. I'm Bill Furman. I'll be your host tonight, joined by my special guest host a little later. Carl Henderson will be joining me. Jim Chesko is taking care of some personal business tonight, so Carl has been kind enough to join me. He'll be coming on a little bit later. I can tell you I'm really excited about tonight's guest as we head into the Final Four weekend. And who to talk to other than someone that's been to the Final Four not once, but three times. Tonight we welcome a Philadelphia basketball legend, a two-time high school All-American at Overbrook High, before playing as part of the Walton Gang at UCLA under the iconic coach John Wooden. Andre McCarter, welcome to the Philly Press Box Radio Roundtable.
How you doing, Bill? Thanks for having me.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us. Hey, before we get started, we want to let our listeners know that we will have our trivia question tonight right about 7:29, where we're celebrating the Villanova Wildcats with our prize being two signed 8x10 photos of Villanova legends, Basketball Hall of Famer Paul Arizin, and the Great Eagles running back Brian Westbrook, courtesy of Carl's Cards and Collectibles, to the first person that can call in and correctly answer the trivia question. Write this number down so you have it for 729. It'll be 929-477-2855. That's 929-477-2855. A little hint to win these two pictures, the Paul Arizin and Brian Westbrook picture. The hint is the question will be about our special guest, Andre McCarter. So listen close, and I think you'll probably hear the answer if you listen. Andre, as you know, it's Final Four week in Philadelphia. The town is buzzing over the Villanova Wildcats, and I have to ask you, for somebody that's been to the Final Four, and, you know, in your day at UCLA, we'll talk about this a little bit more, you know, you guys were expected to win back in those days, but one of our callers, listener John Roberts, he asked a question that he wanted to ask you specifically. He said, if you don't win, is it a disappointment and is the season a disappointment if you don't win one of these last two games?
Well, I've been in both places, so I know. I have an example in 1974, and we lost the championship that we thought, you know, we were going to win third in a row. And we were playing David Thompson, the great Skywalker David Thompson. And we had the game won, and we lost in the final minute of something, which is really very unlikely, unusual for UCLA teams. But it was a bad feeling. It definitely was a bad feeling. And I don't know if I can compare it to other people, other teams, because we were playing to win the championship. So in losing it, and we were expected to win it, some things just turned, you know, wrong at the end of that game, and we lost it. So if it sticks with us, that's one we felt got away from us. We had the game, and we kind of gave it away at the end, which was unusual for us. But it's a bad feeling. So for us, it's hard to recoup the season like other teams will. For most teams, I can go. Most teams, though, I would believe that if you weren't expected, like we were, to go to the Final Four and you know, weed through a lot of different obstacles and get there, I think, and when the dust settles, you can recover and just say, hey, you know what, we had a great year, I made it to the Final Four. And then when you hear about how many people never make it to the Final Four and how many people, schools even that haven't even made it just to the Final Four, then you realize, hey, you did a great thing, and as time goes by, you know, heal some of the wounds of it.
Yeah, and you know, I have to ask you, when you went to your first Final Four, I guess you were maybe a 20-year-old sophomore thereabouts. Is the preparation for the Final Four, as much as you don't want it to be a big deal, is it a bigger deal? And especially nowadays where they're playing these championship games in domed arenas and all that, and that the hype is just so crazy with social media and just the media as a whole. Is the preparation any different for the players?
That's another hard question. It's hard for me to speak for other schools. For us, it's all relative. You know, at that time, whatever was the biggest that was going on at the time when we played, it's the same thing. You know what I mean? It's just relative to the time. So you can't look at it like, well, they got bigger domes now. It really doesn't matter. Whatever they had the best of then, we played in it. So whatever. So you had that feeling, this is the big time. But we were so ingrained that this is what we play. Not that Coach Wooden talked about it to win, but this is how the reason why you came to UCLA. See if you can uphold what had already been set. And then so you played to get there. So when you got there, it was just, you know, that's what you were playing for of the whole season. Now, other teams, it may be different for them because it's like you're playing basketball and, you know, you're in, you know, your conference and then you play your tournament. But then when you get past Sweet 16, you start getting Elite Eight, more media is there. If you haven't been used to that, we were used to the pressure all the time. So, but these other teams, they may feel like, man, this is a little bit bigger than it was because you see more people want to talk to you. Your fans that are around you in your school are more hyped up, you know, and things of that nature. So that can put pressure on you. For us, it was like, well, you're supposed to. This is what you're, you know, like born to do. So, you know, we didn't get as much of that. We were already in that mode already, you know, during the season. So, but I think, yeah, to my opinion, there's more pressure, and it all depends on how you receive it. And some people can get overhyped. I've seen that, you know, they get overhyped. Some teams get overhyped for it. But I think so you do have to watch your emotional state and not, you know, let the bigness of it get you off track and stay focused and tunnel vision on what the mission is, and that is the game and the fulfillment of what you're trying to accomplish.
Excellent. Well, when you come out of Overbrook High School, which there's been a couple pretty good basketball players that have come out of there, Wilt Chamberlain, Walt Hazard, among others, and you won three straight public league championships.
Two straight. I wanted three. I didn't win it my sophomore year, but two straight. But not, I don't think too many other people won two straight. I don't think any Wilt or anybody else won two straight. But anyway, we did win two straight championships, 70 and 71.
Two city championships, three public league championships. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay, that's what I thought. Okay, so you make the All-American team twice in high school. You pretty much had your choice of anywhere you wanted to go in the country. The Big Five at that time was kind of buzzing. There was some real good high school basketball players in Philadelphia, and the college scene was good. But Coach Wooden shows up and comes to town after you, and off you go to Los Angeles and UCLA. And how did that process play out? And did you have Philadelphia schools in your sights, and Coach Wooden just kind of took you away?
No, it really had little to do initially with that. Well, first of all, my high school coach was a great coach, a great teacher, Paul Ward. You know, a legendary coach at Overbrook High School, but he was a master teacher and disciplinarian, and just knew the game. And so he set the tone for what I was looking for at the next stage. And then, you know, with UCLA winning championships, I played basketball because I was attracted to winning. That's how I grew up on the playground. And the guys I was around was always played, you know, to win championships and do whatever it takes in the game, whether it's rebounding, passing, shooting, you know, whatever it was you needed to do to get the victory. So that was my mindset. So everybody saying how good you are, this and that and other, And you got these guys out at UCLA, and then I was an admirer of Lew Alcindor, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar at that time. And, you know, he won three, and I just said, man, this is the challenge, next challenge I would like to undertake. So, you know, eventually it led to me, you know, going to UCLA. But, I looked at some of the big five schools. I mean, Coach Ward was a Temple guy, and, you know, so I definitely had, you know, some thoughts there. And, you know, and then Villanova, you know, was out there, and St. Joe. So all those, you know, fine schools, LaSalle, you know, the whole thing. So, you know, I mean, they were all looked at. They all had great players that had come out of there. So, but UCLA had, you know, just a little bit more as far as I was concerned when it talked to playing championship basketball and just seeing if I could maintain the level that they had already set a precedent for.
So you arrive at UCLA, and you should become part of the group that's known as the Walton Gang. And but when you get there, Coach Wooden, I understand, or I've read up on, wasn't quite ready for the Philly swagger of Andre McCarter at that time. And you made some very important decisions early on in your career at UCLA, and you opted the red shirt back when red shirt wasn't a fashionable thing to do. How did that work out?
Well, it was a decision I made once I had talked to my mom, who, you know, really wasn't, you know, basketball type of parent, you know, as far as just being all into the game. But she knew, it got me an education for free. You know, it was something I loved and I did all the time. And so when I talked to her, you know, because I still had a lot of schools still saying, you know, if you come over here, we can, you know, you'll be able to do everything you can do and all this kind of stuff like that. But, you know, basically, she just said these words to me about, you know, being more, that this guy must know what he's talking about. Because when I got there, he had won 7 national championships in a row. And, you know, and maybe I, you know, need to think about that. So when I looked at the situation and I decided, what did I come here for? Came here to win championships. So, you know, whatever you got to do, do it. So I took a year and studied Coach Wooden. And probably something none of the other players that played for him got a chance to do. And it kind of leads to some other things you may ask me about later in regards to Coach Wooden. But I studied him and understand. And what basically real quickly happened is that I had to adjust to the way he liked the game more basically played. But what he did show was he increased the, you know, I already had a high level, in my opinion, of not turning the ball over, playing team ball. So it wasn't any kind of disciplinary problems that we had. It was just a matter of flair in the way I, you know, in Philadelphia, we like to entertain the crowd while still being able to get the job done. But Coach Wooden wanted to just get the job done. So just get the job done and make it basic instead of going behind the back, do all these other things. And so what he did in a way is raise my proficient level even up higher to see the game on another plateau that allowed me to go literally without turnovers and mistakes in some of the tournament games. Like, there's probably a record if they had kept track of it, never turning the ball over. So I took my good ball handling skills and took it to another level. Just making the easy play was easy for me because I had the ball handling and passing and vision that I had. So just taking care of the ball and running the team, that was like, you know, probably 1/4 of what I could really do. So it was easy to do that job, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That was basically it.
I read a story where you were in practice and you came down and you did a little fake behind the back pass one way and faked him. I believe it was Bill Walton, actually. You faked him out, you shoveled it the other way, mm-hmm. and it was a very pretty play. And everybody thought so except for Coach, and he took you into the office and he gave you an analytical breakdown of why that was not a good play. Is that a true story?
Yeah, it is. It's a little different from what you're saying, but in essence, yeah, it was like that. Basically, Bill, a lot of people, Bill was one of the greatest players as far as the ability to block shots and things of that nature. So it was fun, you know, for me with all the stuff that used to play in the playgrounds in Philly, you know, trick basketball. We seen Earl Monroe, Bobby Lewis, Guy Rogers, you know. We got so many examples of guys that knew how to do stuff with the ball. So I did one of those on him, and you know, all the players just fell out laughing. I mean, he went one way thinking the ball went that way and went the other way. So in the meantime, here comes Coach Wooden, and he, you can kind of hear him when he, fast walking down the court. Andre, grace and sakes alive, you know, and he's going off and all this stuff. And, you know, you do that kind of play and you won't play here and this and that and the other. And so the next day I go in the office because I want to know the play was successful. I want to know what's going on. So I get in, he finally calms me down, and then we get to talking. He says, well, let me show you some statistics. So he goes in his drawer. I knew I was in trouble when it happened, and he starts pulling out these cards where he has kept track of statistical information on whether you throw in this particular situation this kind of pass or if you throw the basic two-hand pass on this situation, what the percentage was. Make a long story short, by the time he finished with the information, the pass I make was successful about 78% of the time. The pass he was talking about I could have made in that situation and still made the play was like 98%. So you're sitting there and you're like, well, which one are you going to choose? I couldn't go for the 78 even though I loved the play. I had to go with the 98, and that kind of soothed, you know, all the steam kind of just subsided. And I said, okay, Coach, I see what you're talking about. And,
Lesson learned. Well, as you mentioned, you get to the Final Four as a sophomore. You get beat by the eventual champion, NC State, and David Thompson in that semifinal game. And I'm interested to know, and by the way, I probably should preface this. I think almost anything that's ever been written by Coach Wooden, I've tried to read through my life. And
You got one more. You got one more.
That's right.
I'll tell you about that.
We're going to get to that too. But I'm interested to know Coach Wooden's reaction to losing. You know, in a game as you mentioned that you probably should have won, and losing an opportunity to play for another championship. I'm just curious at how that played out. And Bill Walton and the boys were still juniors, so you had another chance to come back again. And just curious at how that all played.
Bill and Jamal Wilkes. I was there last year, but
that's right.
Wouldn't the coach at the end of that game? We really needed ball handling, Bill, and so for some reason at that time I had early in the game. I think the coach, you know, I traveled or something happened, and I had come in for Tom Curry. So anyway. Instead of dwelling on how he acted after the game, because Coach always wanted to keep us at even keel. Don't get too high on wins and don't get too low on losses. Keep the medium ground. And that's, we were like professionals, basically. And so he had that attitude. I'm sure he was wanted to win, and I'm sure he was, you know, sad that he won. But he, later in life, talking to him, I said, Coach, all the other assistant coaches are telling you to put Andre. All we need to do is take care of the ball. You got this guy over here on the bench, and if you just need to dribble the clock out, that's what I was known for. But, you know, he didn't do it. So he said in his mind he went with the people that brought him to the dance, and that's what he stuck with. So you can't argue with a guy on that. He went with, you know, the guys that have won 88 straight games in a row, you know, and the Tommy Curtis and Greg Lee were the guards that primarily in my first year as varsity were the guys in the lead, and that's, you know, who had brought them this far, and they were all seniors at this time. That's what he went with. And so that's the price, you know, that he paid, but that's our Coach Wooden is. He made a commitment, and he felt that those guys deserved the opportunity to do what they had to do. They just didn't get it done, and we're sitting here with, you know, that's what happened. So that was one that got away.
But you came back the next season in 74-75 and in a tough tournament. You win round one in overtime against Michigan, and then you have a semifinal game that you win in overtime against Louisville. You beat Kentucky in Coach Wooden's final game to send him out a champion. But, you know, an interesting fact about that run, in the final three games of the year, Andre McCarter is now driving the UCLA bus. He plays 125 of the last 125 minutes of the season, three straight complete games.
Every game.
Yeah.
It was five games because we had to play.
Five games.
Just a real quick side note, in 75, for some reason, I guess they got tired of us winning or whatever it was, or they were sick of UCLA, they put a fifth game into the circuit. So before, you just had to win whatever region you got into, because it was like, you know, the 32 teams. So whatever region you got in, you had to win the West, that region. So we were obviously in the Western Regional, and we had to win that. So that would be two games, and then you had the Final Four, which was another two games. But in this year, they said, oh, you got to go play this play-in game against Michigan. We're like, well, what's that? So, but we had to go do it. And so, we, like you said, we almost, you know, could have lost that game, but we won it. And then play every minute there. And then we played, you know, Montana, and then Arizona State in the Western Regional to beat them as Lionel Hollins led team with Arizona State. And then we had a double overtime with Louisville, which was like playing ourselves because Denny Crum was Wooden's assistant. We ended up, you know, playing a powerful powerhouse Kentucky team. That team was loaded with talent and players and big people. And so mm-hmm. it was a really great run to win that. We came and took it back. But anyway, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, how important was it to you, I guess, at that point that Coach Wooden had handed you the keys to the bus, and he had that much confidence in you to, you know, to that you had developed that much in his mind and as a player yourself?
Yeah, well, it meant a lot because, you know, when a coach, first of all, when a coach keeps you, one of the things Coach Wooden always was a stickler for was, were you concentrating in the game? And he looked at it not so much on just making a mistake, but how the mistake was made and where your mind is at. So for him to keep a player in the game, especially a point guard who at that time handled the ball 90% of the time, the conditioning level, first of all, he had to believe, you know, that you had. So when timeouts would come and he looks over there at me, I look at him, I'm coming ready to go. So Coach knew I can go 40 or plus without losing my ability to keep going. And then when you have a guy that's never turning the ball over every game, just no turnovers, and he's playing every minute, you can just ride that horse. You know, that's the way I look at it. If I'm a coach, you know, I'm going to ride this guy. He's getting the ball to the people at the right time, controlling the tempo of the game. He does never turning the ball over. Nobody can, you know, stop him from getting where he wants to get on the floor. Then what else? He's going to play every minute till we get to where we're going. So that is a high level of confidence.
That's right. Well, hey, I have a couple more things I want to ask you for sure, but we have a caller who wants to talk to you. You have a minute to take a call?
It's your show, baby. Just bring, you know, whatever you want me to do, baby.
All right. Let's see. Let's get them hooked up here. Hello, welcome to the show. You have a question for Andre?
Yes, actually, I do. In a quick Coach Wooden story, I attended one of his basketball camps many, many, many years ago. My father took me to it. But first of all, a real quick question, and it's something that's been mentioned, and I heard Bill Walton talk about it, but never mentioned. He didn't like the nickname Wizard of Westwood. Do you know why that was? And then I have a quick Wooden story. But he did not like the Wizard of Westwood. Can you elaborate on why you may think that was?
Yeah, it's no think. It's for sure. First of all, you know, his religious beliefs, didn't like, you know, being compared to a wizard, number one. Number two, I don't think he liked it because what he did wasn't wizardry. It wasn't being a wizard. It was being is his ability to dissect the fundamentals of the game and get young people to execute them, to teach it to them to such a high level that they could execute the game. But when you say wizards, it's like he was doing something magical that was outside of the realm of anybody else. And that's why people think no one can come behind Coach Wooden. Coach, that's not true. You just have to have someone that knows the type of details and things that he's executing. Everybody knows the fundamentals of the game, and he was able to get it to the young people that were playing for him and get them to excel at executing those things under pressure on a consistent level. And that's why, you know, I think he didn't really like that whole thing with the Wizard of Westwood, and he really hated it, actually, is the way, the better, more real way to put it. He's such a gracious man, he would just let people just say whatever. He didn't fight it, so we didn't get into it. But I later talk about it in some recent times, and also in my book I have coming, I talk about it, about that issue.
Understood. Well, that explains it to a little bit more, and I had always kind of wondered why that. I didn't know if it was a religious thing or, you know, a wizard could be taken a lot of different ways, especially. But anyways, real quick, I was at a basketball clinic many, many years ago at Long Beach City College, and he was a guest speaker. And they picked a couple of kids out of the crowd, and we're going back many years, but I later ended up playing at Long Beach City College. But they pulled a couple of kids out of the crowd that ended up having pretty good dribbling skills. And, of course, coming from the inner city myself, being a white student-athlete, I did emulate all the things that I saw on TV. Nowadays, you know, the swag and behind-the-back passes, and it was successful on the court, especially against the kids I was playing back then in that part of the country. And I'll never forget, my father walked me up to him, and I says, "Coach, what do you think?" And I remember he looked at me, and he was obviously older at the time with gray hair, and he looked at me, and he said, "Hey, listen, kid, you know, that nigger shit has no business on the court here. If you want to play like one of them spooks, take that shit over to San Diego. We really don't like to see all that nigger basketball out here. And if you want to play like a nigger and have kids out of wedlock, well, you know, go to a different part of the town. We don't want to take that shit to Watts or to Compton. I don't want to see any of that spear chunking basketball here." You know, did you ever get that from him?
I've never heard Coach Wooden ever see a cuss word in his life, I've never heard anybody say they thought heard him cuss. So I don't know who you were talking about. I don't know who that person was, but John Wooden, I know if he said "gracious sakes alive" to you, that was his worst cuss word. I never heard him say a cuss word, damn, hell, any other words you were saying. Never heard him say the N-word. I never heard him even insinuate that. He's never that kind of man. He's one of the most innovative people. He had players that back in the 50s and the 40s that he brought to tournaments that he wouldn't refuse to play the game because they wouldn't let the players stay in the hotel. So that's not, I don't know, you know, I don't know what happened there. I have no idea where those comments come from, but you know, I can't tell people what they've heard or whatever. I'm just telling you what I know. That's literally absurd.
All right, my man. Well, thanks for the call. We appreciate it.
Okay.
Hey, Andre, sorry about that. I can't control what people say. That's not quite the way we like to do things here.
I said what I had to say.
I hear you. Hey, I do have a couple things I certainly want to get to, and one is really important to me, and the other one's really important to you. You played a very key role in Coach Wooden receiving the Presidential Medal of Honor, and why was that so important to you, and you made it happen. That's great.
Yeah, real quickly, my wife and I watching the Presidential Medal of Freedom Award, and at the time I didn't know a whole lot of information about it. Presidential Medal of Freedom Award is given to is the highest honor a citizen can receive. And so we were listening to all the dynamics of what made people get the award this particular night. And from there, I said to my wife, I said, "Hey, you know, Coach Wooden deserves to have that award. He's done so much for people and his philosophies and, you know, the way he's carried himself. And he deserves to have that and the type of things he's achieved." And so we started a campaign. And one of the things we knew is we couldn't tell Coach Wooden because he didn't like all those, you know, things that blew him up. You know, he really had trouble even with the amount of accolades he was getting as a coach. So he was very humble about that, and he probably said, "Oh, no, Andre, I don't want to get involved," you know, like that. And so I knew I probably could have got, you know, 20,000 signatures if I needed it. But then you got people that run their mouth, and they'd be, "Oh, Andre's working on this Presidential Medal of Freedom." And he had found out. He'd be like, "Andre, I don't want to be involved." So we kept it away from him, and instead of using, you know, fans and other people, I went to his players because they know how he is. And had, you know, them write letters. So we ended up getting in 30 letters from people from his team, players from his 40s when he first got there in 48, all the way through to teams in the 70s. So we ended up with about 30 letters. You know, all the top names, you know, guys were in there involved too. And we sent them out to Bill Clinton, was the president at the time. It was near his last year. And then a couple things happened. But he suggested that it'd be better to go to the next regime that came in as president. So we did that. Then 9/11 happened, and then some political things happened. It's a whole story kind of in my book, too. But anyway, make a long story short, at the end, 3 years, we were able to get it through, and he was nominated and selected in July, I think it's 23rd or 2003. He was like about 92 or something like that, right around there. And, you know, he was awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom Award. It was a big deal. And people,
yes.
Everywhere were you know, acknowledging me. I didn't think it was, you know, going to be as much publicity behind it. I just thought it was something cute, you know, a player getting, helping his, you know, coach get something. But it blew up a little bit more than I anticipated.
That's awesome. Wait, speaking of your book, you wrote a book, Anatomy of a Champion, about – It's a labor of love for UCLA. Tell us all about that, and where is it available, and tell us how it all came about.
Well, you know, the book was because of just dealing with – there's a lot of things that historically weren't captured. And one thing that even though Coach Wooden has written a lot of books, been written for him and by him, but 10 championship years. So I have over 600-700 photographs that are, with captions. So I got not only UCLA, but all the players that UCLA had to overcome throughout the years, whether it was Cassie Russell or Rick Mount, and, you know, all these type of names you could throw out that UCLA had to overcome in college basketball to get to win the championship. So it wasn't just an easy ride. And that, I tried to use that to build the book into a UCLA inclusion with all the other great players that they had to overcome. And so it kind of goes the year from 64 to 75. The problem has been is that the publishing world has changed. It's a very expensive book. It's a 20-year body of work. It's a historical, great piece of work that where I, you know, go into each, you know, group because you have different categories based on the group. And the titles are based on each group, like, you know, Alcindor area, which is Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's years, and the Walton Gang years, and it's broken down like that. So right now I'm close, you know, completed and since the manuscript, the photographs selected, captioned. And so now I'm just waiting and trying to find the right resources to get it published all the way. So it hasn't been published yet. And, you know, in the publishing world, a lot of things have changed, and the expense to put this type of book together has been kind of hold back. But it's a reason for it. The timing is good. A couple of people wrote some negative books on Coach Wooden, so this one, it must be destined, divine destiny for me to not have done it so that my book can come behind and kind of clean up a whole bunch of things that people have said that just weren't the truth about Coach Wooden or what they would try to imply about Coach Wooden in their books. So, it, you know, once it gets ready, though, it's going to be something any basketball fan that, you know, like UCLA or even just like college basketball, really chronicalizes college basketball from 1964 through 1975. So it's fascinating body of work in my eyes. And it doesn't belong to me anymore. I really have gotten to a point where I just want to get it out because it really belongs to the people. And, you know, and the legacy that John Wooden left and his players, too. That's the good thing about this book. It's not – a lot of people just want to talk about Coach Wooden, but Coach Wooden couldn't do anything. And he wouldn't tell you this himself all the time. It's my players that did the executing and the work. You know, I just showed them how to do it. And I needed them to be able to execute the geniusry that he, you know, provided. Somebody had to execute it, and he found the right players that knew how to sacrifice for the team and make it happen to win. So that's what it kind of covers, and it tells all about all the players and stories about them, and, you know, it's really good compilation work.
Can't wait. Can't wait to see it. Can't wait to see it. Hey, one other thing I wanted to hit you up on. I know you're a CEO of a company. You invented something for basketball players and other athletes. Tell us about that right quick.
Yeah, the Touch Glove is a product I invented and patented. It was patented. And it basically, in basketball, touches the equalizer in the game. And as an example, you could say, well, here's a guy like Steve Nash or even Stephen Curry now. You know, they're not dunking the ball all the time. They're not overpowering people. They're not the fastest. They're not the highest jumpers. Athletically, they're not the best athletes. But because of skill, because of their touch with the ball, their passing and shooting is on a high level and allows them to play basketball with even more talented physical, athletic types because they have their touch. And so you're looking at the game today, throw shooting is horrible in a lot of places. The games are decided, in my opinion, based on free throws, and all that's is touch, fingertip touch. So my glove, the touch glove, you put it on, and the reason why I got a patent, because it has the ability to do what it says it's going to do, which is change your muscle memory to force you to start using your fingertips instead of your hands being on the basketball with the palm. And that's one of the problems that players have. And so it breaks that habit and creates the new ones that you need to handle the ball properly with your fingertips. It develops your shooting, passing, dribbling, anything that has to do with handling the ball. So it's a really interesting product, and we're on the verge of bringing it nationally and worldwide. We got a couple of things lined up to get it there.
Okay. Is there any information that you could give out now for people that would be interested in taking a look at that?
Yeah, we're at www.touch-glove.com, and it has a lot of information on there. And then we're on, if you go to about.com, if you want to read up on historically how I'm on a database there for Black History Month, because I'm one of the few professional athletes that have invented something, and they have a list of all these inventors, African-American inventors. I'm one. If you put my name in at about.com, it'll show all that information and be able to tell you about it more. So, and our number, okay?
No, go ahead.
Yeah, so I was just thinking that, we've had a lot of NBA players have used our gloves. I don't want to say names, but you would know them, big names. And we're looking to get, some endorsement situations going and things of that nature. And we haven't – everyone that's used the gloves have benefited from – we've never had, like, one pair of touch gloves returned where someone says, oh, this is no good or whatever it is, doesn't work. So if you use them, they will change your muscle memory to the point where you're holding the balls correctly. And we call the touch gloves the coach on the hand. They, and because they coach you while you're playing, you don't have to just put them on and you play with them in practice and in games if you can. Because in order for habits, it's all about habits. It breaks the bad habits that you have with having the ball and creates new ones, the proper ones for you. And all you have to do is put them on and just use them. And before you know it, we've had all kind of reports and people saying how their shot has improved, and free throw shooting and dribbling and passing, just the touch with the ball, catching the ball, people that have problems catching the ball too.
All right. Okay, well, we've used up too much of your time, I think, but I have one final question for you, Andre. Who's going to win the 2016 National Championship come Monday night?
Well, it's a tough one, but let's talk about Villanova real quick. If they just keep shooting the way the percentages they're shooting at and the defense that they're playing, they could win it. They have every opportunity there. There's no one there that's a Goliath that they have to get over. I mean, North Carolina, if they shoot good against them and play good defense, they have a good chance against them. So I think they have a chance to win it. So I hope, Villanova makes a good run. I'm a lucky guy. UCLA's not in it. Give them a shout out.
There you go. There you go. Well, hey, I think we took up all your time, and, I could talk to you for 2 or 3 hours. We could do this again, and we could just keep talking about cool stuff.
Hey, I appreciate it, Bill. Thank you for the opportunity.
Okay, Andre. Thank you very much.
Bye.
All right. Carl, you with me, my friend?
Oh, that's a hard act to follow, my friend.
Woo, man. We're talking some serious hoop right there. How cool is that? That's a down to earth Billy guy just doing great things. So much fun. I could talk about that stuff for days.
I'd love to see him come back to Philly and work with some of the youth here. He's got a lot to offer.
Yes, he does. Well, hey, let's go ahead and get this trivia question out. We're a little behind on our time, but we'll get to it, okay? It's as we mentioned, we're celebrating the Villanova Wildcats with our prize tonight being 2 signed 8x10 photos of Villanova legends, Basketball Hall of Famer Paul Arizin, and the Great Eagles running back Brian Westbrook, courtesy of Carl's Cards and Collectibles. The first person that can correctly answer this trivia question. Okay, if you were listening to Andre, and I tell you what, I made this, Carl, just about as easy as it could be. Okay, And
so this is a slam dunk. Is it?
This is a slam dunk. Okay. Our shopforkisses.org phone line to answer the call, answer the question, 929-477-2855. Here it is, as simple as it gets. Even Chet would get this right, Carl. What was the draw that took Andre McCarter to UCLA? About as simple as it gets right there.
Slam dunk.
Slam dunk. Okay, let me take a break right quick, and we'll get back to you, Carl. Let's thank our sponsor, shopforkisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. By logging on to www.shopforkisses.org's website, you become connected to over 3,000 stores, including all the ones you already shop at. Every purchase back gets you cash back, and each purchase benefits the Kisses for Kyle Foundation, which helps families dealing with childhood cancer throughout it all about. Do you have any questions? Contact Bob Sullivan at bobsullivan.shopcom@gmail.com or give him a call at 484-319-8043. Well, hey, Carl, as we promised, you're here to join me here for an abbreviated second half, but let's talk Villanova right quick. And we've got to get a prediction out of you, and let's see what we can do. Who are you liking? We got Villanova, Oklahoma. We have North Carolina, Syracuse. Who you like?
Well, there's no doubt that I'm a homer, so you know one part of the answer right off the top. I got to go Nova. I think Jay has done a great job this year with his guys. They're playing at a high level right now. And I'm in the other matchup, I'm looking for an upset. I'm going to go Syracuse. I want to see Syracuse upset the big, mighty North Carolina team.
Well, and you know, I've never been a huge Jim Boeheim fan, but that man's coaching his tail end off in this tournament. And, he's got those kids playing at a high level. They very well could beat North Carolina. They very well could win this thing at the rate they're playing right now.
They showed the nation a lot the other night, coming back from 16 and to put that team away in the second half. I'm like, boy, if they can carry some of that momentum into the North Carolina game, they're going to give the Tar Heels a battle.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Well, I'm going to go homer also on you. I'm going Villanova. I'm going to go North Carolina. I think it is going to be one of those knockdown dragouts, but I'm going to wear my homer hat too, and I'm going to go with Villanova just because, doggone it, we need to win that thing.
Parade in
yes,
Philadelphia.
We do. Yes, we do. Hey, I wanted to ask you, I asked Andre this, and I want to ask you the same thing. If Villanova loses, if they lose Saturday or if they lose Monday, is it a disappointment? Anything less than a national championship at this point, a disappointment?
I don't think so. I think they, they played, good ball all year. I don't know that had anyone picked them to win it all. I think they've overcome some adversity. They got past, their level where they needed to be with the Elite Eight and now the Final Four. I don't think so, but I hate to even think along those lines right now because I just think when they loaded onto that plane today, the seniors were kissing the floor at their practice facility for the last time as seniors, and I just think there's a lot of emotion going into that, and I think that can carry them through.
I hope you're right. I hope you're right. Hey, we're going to talk Flyers, but let's see if we have a caller to win this trivia question right quick. Hello, welcome to the show. Who do we have?
You have your reigning champion again.
Danny Boy.
Yes, sir. I'm
Danny
here for
Boy.
Redemption.
All right. Do you have the actual correct answer this time, or are you just going to throw something out and hope we give you the prize?
I believe I do, but before I give it to you, I just would like to I'd like to say that Andre McCarter was a great guest, and I want to commend him on how well he handled that first caller that you guys had. Mr. McCarter handled that with a ton of class, a lot more class than that caller had.
Absolutely. I am with you. Okay, what was the draw that took Andre McCarter to UCLA?
He wanted to win.
Answer. Danny, hold up. Hold up.
All right.
You sure you got the answer?
Well, can I be within 10 or 15? Oh, it's not a number.
Lay it on.
There's no Chet here lobbying for you, okay?
Big C, you're not in my corner? Put you on the spot there.
There you go.
What do you got?
All right. He went there because he wanted to win championships.
Winning, baby. Winning. That's right. That's right. You got it. Danny, you are the winner.
Ding, 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 ding.
Awesome.
There you go.
Now I can feel that hole on my wall where that Kurt Simmons picture was supposed to be.
Yeah, but you didn't read the fine print. You got to read the fine print. You have to come
right
to Havertown to pick it up.
Hey, I tell you what, I made. Can I send somebody in my stead?
Nope.
I'll tell you what, then, Carl, you hold on to those pictures, and at some point, and I can't say when, but I will be there to get them.
I'm just messing with you. You know that.
I know.
All right, Danny. Well, wait, we appreciate it. We'll send it to you.
Thank you very much, and go Flyers.
Yeah, all right. Well, hey, Carl, speaking of the Flyers, your favorite topic, maybe your all-time favorite topic, I don't know about you, but speaking of disappointment, I think the way the Flyers have played down the stretch, they've played outstanding hockey. If they don't make these playoffs, if they end up being the odd team out, I, for one, am going to be disappointed.
Well, again, I'm going to remain optimistic, and I'm going to, you know, stay on course here. They're really playing some great hockey right now, and they just seem to be finding a way to make those plays to win. You know, take, for example, the other night, a play from Ghost to G to win the game. Those are signs that tell you the team is really gelling and coming together to be a winning team. So I got the playoffs I'm penciling in dates, so I'm ready.
Well, I'm with you. I think they're going to make it. They've got some tough games they have to win here, but I think they're playing well. I would like to see a little more goal scoring, but you know, as you get late in the year and into the playoffs, the goal scoring, the defense always seems to take over. Boy, I'd sure like to see more than two goals a game.
Yeah, that seems to have been a problem that they've had all year. They've been coming through big. You know, this second half of the season has been, I wish we had some of that in the first half. But, I'm excited. I'm real excited for them.
Me too. Hey, let's jump over because we still got a bunch of things to do here. And we got to talk to Boys of Summer. They're getting ready to get started next Monday, to be exact. Six on the road for the Fighting Phils before they come home the following week. It's official prediction time, and Chet has recorded his prediction, and I haven't heard it yet, so we'll see what he has to say. But I did want to tell you, just as a reminder, Carl, I hit the 99 losses dead on last year. So hopefully the Phils do a little better than that in 2016.
I don't know how much better. I've took a long, hard look at that team. That bullpen is scary. The outfield is just they're shaky. I don't know. I'm going to be optimistic. I'll be a fan. I'll be there. But I just I'm a little concerned. They got some big holes.
All right. Well, let's hear what Chet has to say. We'll come back and get your prediction, and I will give you mine. So, as I said, I have not heard this. So, here we go.
I love the Phillies. I'll be at the home opener and several other games this season, and I'm pretty optimistic that with guys like J.P. Crawford, Nick Williams, Jake Thompson, the catchers of the future, Alfaro and Knapp, that much better days are ahead. But for this season, well, Maikel Franco and Odubel Herrera will be fun to watch as they continue to develop, and I can't wait to see what happens with the pitchers, Aaron Nola, Jared Eichhoff, Jeremy Hellickson, and Vince Velasquez. But the offense probably won't score a lot of runs, and the bullpen, well, it scares the heck out of me, frankly. So, let's say 9 wins above last season and a record of 72-90. There you have it.
72-90. All right. Where are you at, Carl?
Well, it's funny because I'm having a tough time, you know, picking up 10 extra wins from last year. So, where does that put us at 73? I'm darn near right where, you know, where Chet predicted. Maybe one more win, 73 and, you know,
I'm with you, and I'm going to. I don't see them winning quite as many games as you guys, but not too far off. I'm going to go 70-92. Is my prediction, and I'm with you. You know, these young guys may come along okay. They're still obviously a couple years away, and the bullpen is a train wreck. There has a chance to be a train wreck. So, 73 for you, 72 for Chet, 70 for me. Not bad. We're all in the hunt.
That's amazing that we're that close together. On a good week, I would have thought, you know, that, you know, an extra 10 or 15 wins with a new manager, you know, a full season with Miguel Franco. And I just can't wrap myself around that outfield. Other than Odubel Herrera in center field, I just don't know, you know, where are you going to get power? Where's the power coming from?
Right. Oh, I'm with you. And that was the same question we had last year. We talked to Tom McCarthy about on our show at the beginning of last season, you know, and it just didn't exist. So, hey, we don't have a ton of time here, but we got a couple callers lined up, and my guess is they might want to talk to you. So let's see if we can get these guys on real quick. Hello, welcome to the show. We got just a couple minutes for you. Who we have?
I'm going to remain anonymous and just let you know, Bill, that I picked Villanova to win it all in my bracket pool.
You did before the tournament.
Before the tournament, well, I got them going all the way. So
fantastic.
You know who this is now, right?
I do know who
it is.
I can tell by the voice.
Gotcha.
It's
just
the brains of one organization that I deal with. I know that.
There you go. I just wanted you to know.
All right.
I don't know how she got the phone. I have no idea how she got the phone number.
My daughter helped me.
But you know the voice. All right, Sue. Thanks.
Thank you.
All right, Carl. We got one more. Let's see who we at. Hey, welcome to the show. Who do we have?
You got Joe from Florida.
Joe from
Florida. Joe Stinger.
Joe Stinger from Florida.
How's it going? All right, Joe.
I'm doing great. I got a
good
question for Carl. What does
go
he
ahead.
Think of that Emery pickup?
I've been trying to find out all day where he's been playing, and nobody can tell me. He played a few minor league games, so I'm like, I don't understand this move, Joe. I really don't.
Yeah. Not unless the other guy is hurt badly, more bad than we figured.
Well, the
that's
Barber,
exactly what I was thinking.
He's done for the season, so they needed a third goalie. I would assume that's the direction they're going.
Because it looks like he's going to be the backup. To me, he's probably got the most experience if Mason ever goes down.
Yeah,
I got my
I don't
fingers
think they're
crossed,
going to give
Joe.
Goalie a chance, Carl.
It's not looking like it.
Whatever.
Nah. All right, I'll let you guys go. It's nice talking to you, and a great show, too.
All right,
thanks for calling in, Joe.
All right, Carl, hey, why we have you live, how about you give us the signing update you've got coming up real quick over at Carl's Card.
I'm running out of calendar.
Well, since we're pressed for time, you know, we've got Ray Allison and Terry Kartner, a couple of former Flyers, this Saturday. Next Saturday, we've got rookie linebacker Jordan Hicks. But you guys, everybody can go to the website and check out. We got a full schedule for April. I just want to mention something real quick that we've partnered up with the Reading Phillies again. We've got a couple of games that we're going to sponsor so people can send us some messages. We're giving away free tickets. Our first game is May 9th. So I'd really like to see people, you know, jump on board with that and, you know, go to the website, check everything out as far as the signings, and, you know, give us a holler for some free tickets to see these young young Philly prospects.
All right, good deal. That's Carl's Cards and Collectibles, 22 West Eagle Road in Havertown, PA, or 610-789-4996, or the website carlscards.com, or even on Twitter at Carl's Cards. All right, Carl, have you put together a parting shot for tonight?
I have not, and I'm not. I've been a big. I've bashed Jay Wright enough in the past that I really want to wish the Wildcats the best. I've not been a big Jay fan over the years for some crazy reasons. But I really fell in love with him this year. I think it's, you know, a couple of the players, a couple of his seniors have just, you know, turned this program into a winner. So I want to wish the Wildcats the best, and hopefully next week we'll be making plans for a parade.
Well, that'd be something. And, you know, speaking of that, I think, you know, the Philadelphia fans, I as I've watched this whole thing evolve, it's kind of funny, you know, and social media really makes it different because, you know, you have these guys that are maybe Temple fans or St. Joe fans or whatever who just absolutely cannot bring themselves to root for Villanova no matter what, you know. But for the most part, Philadelphia has climbed behind these guys and – you know, as we've said a bunch of times before, it's a city that's hungry for a champion, and I think it would be great for it to happen. And as we've said about a lot of things in Philadelphia sports, I think the bright side is ahead. Certainly is with the Flyers, the Phillies. We think they're going to get a little bit better. Hopefully, the Eagles are on the right track. The Sixers, well, you know, that remains to be seen where all that's going. But Temple football, I mean, a lot of good things happening in Philadelphia.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Couldn't agree more.
All right. Absolutely. Okay. So, hey, Carl, I appreciate you stepping in. We were kind of short because we ran a little long on our talk with Andre, but I certainly appreciate you stepping in on such short notice. And
anytime.
All right. And, of course, we want to thank our special guest, Andre McCarter, for joining us, Carl's Cards and Collectibles, for their continuing support of the show, Mary Flanagan, our marketing extraordinaire behind the scenes, and our sponsor, ShopForKisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. For Jim Cecesco, who will return next week, this is Bill Furman. We hope you will join Philly Press Box Radio on Wednesday, April 6th at 7 p.m., You can listen to our Facebook page or on the internet at www.blogtalkradio.com/PhillyFreshBoxRadio and on both iTunes and Stitcher.
That's getting out of the store.
Philadelphia's
coming in the store.